Roto-Grinders presents the Daily Fantasy Fix Podcast. Bringing you up-to-the-minute industry news.
Time for me to tell you about the biggest tournament in the history of daily fantasy sports.
Interviews from the biggest names in the industry.
The one and only Kondia. Head Chopper joins us now to talk about this weekend in daily fantasy football. Now on the podcast, Napster Man.
And game analysis to save you time and help you build your bankroll.
Both the salary and the matchup are just too good. If you are not playing him in your head-to-head game, you are just going to lose.
Here is your host, the one and only, Dan Bach.
Hey everybody, what is going on? Welcome, Roto Grinders. Daily fantasy fix for you here on this fifth day of December. It's a Friday, and we will be heading out to the Atlantis Resort in the Bahamas for our first live final coverage of the season. Really excited for that. Somebody's going to walk away with $1 million out there on DraftKings. I will levy a prediction. That's right, a prediction. Those are fun. I've been actually pretty good with this, so we'll see if I can't keep that going. Might be some good karma for somebody in the field, so we will see. Also, good show, though, for you today, and we're going to get right to it, though, in just a moment. Corey Albertson, he is arguably one of the best daily fantasy players on the planet. He is part of Team Salcap / Ray of Hope, and he has already been spotlighted in the Wall Street Journal, HBO, in an upcoming documentary, and we grabbed him for about 40 minutes yesterday and got to talk with him all about the industry, all about how he got into it, you know, his successes, the future, and honestly, an all-encompassing interview with somebody who, even though, you know, he's been spotlighted a lot, he's not somebody that I've really been able to sit down and pick his brain a whole lot, and I was happy to do it. And I think it's a pretty interesting interview, to say the very least, and that will be coming to you here in just a moment. But it's long, so I understand that. So basically, if you want some NBA discussion, we're going to have that for you too after the interview. So Friday's a big night in the industry. We got 12 games today. So definitely don't want to neglect that. But this interview is too good to kind of hold on to till next week. And plus, he could win another $1 million this weekend out at DraftKings. So that's pretty exciting stuff. We do want to thank FanDuel. They are our sponsor here of this show. Make sure you run on over to their site again this weekend. They've got tons of big things happening, as always, each and every day, each and every weekend, and really no different tonight. Looking at their NBA tournament offerings here today, looks like the NBA Slam, $225,000. The Monster is sitting at $100,000, so you're talking just buku bucks to be won each and every night over there on FanDuel. And then this weekend, tournament-wise, their Sunday Million, $2.25 million in that tournament, so that does not suck whatsoever. So definitely take advantage of that. The Monster at $400,000. And of course, next weekend, we will be out in Vegas for the FFFC, the largest single payout in daily fantasy history in 2 weeks for their FFFC. $2 million to first. I believe it's maybe $7 million in total payouts on that day. It's just an incredible tournament, and really looking forward to being a part of that next weekend as well. So make sure you join FanDuel if you haven't done so already. Great sponsor here of the Roto Grinders podcast. Thank you to them. All right, real quick, let me levy a prediction for you in terms of King of the Beach for DraftKings. Again, I'll be heading out there. We'll be doing the Sirius show from there on Saturday night. So hopefully we'll be talking to some of the finalists one-on-one. And obviously, you know, Sunday the coverage will be right here on rotogrinders.com. And it's going to be as good as we've ever done, I think. We've upgraded some of the equipment, got a great team heading out there. And it's always fun to kind of see this drama. Hopefully we have some drama play out for this King of the Beach final. And again, $1 million is the first place payout of this. I believe it's 50 players here, so not a huge, huge field. Somebody is going to have a pretty good opportunity here. 1 in 50 shot at $1 million. A couple of guys have multiple seats. You got Comox Warrior. You got Dandy Don, a.k.a. Loves Bases. You got Smizzle. You got CSU Ram with 3. You've got Hard 4, who's already won $1 million, with 3. Mark Gino Rex with 3. Live Straddle with 2. So all these guys with multiple teams absolutely at an advantage over other players. It gives them, obviously, the ability to diversify, get exposure to maybe some popular plays and maybe some not-so-popular plays. So, honestly, I think you're crazy not to consider somebody who's got multiple lineups. And that's why I'm actually going to levy a prediction. The guy who I am picking to win is somebody I've never spoken to. I have really no idea much about him except that he's already won $1 million. And boy, did he just freaking dominate last week. And I absolutely love taking guys who are hot coming into a final. Now, CSU Ram, pretty damn hot for sure. But I'm going to give it to Hard Four as my pick to take down the million and become maybe the first person to win $2 million prizes in one season. So, Hard Four, you're my pick. You know, I'm not going out on a limb just because he's got three, but man, that's just a monstrous advantage to have. And we'll hopefully be able to sit down with him at some point in time this weekend and find out more about him. But I think that his mentality of going after a second million is, you know, very hard going after a second million, spending money on expensive buy-ins and willing to risk some of that money that you've won to kind of get that second million. It's absolutely a smart maneuver in my mind to do that. And boy, he's been really good so far this season. So I really like him. Live Straddle has been good all season long. So he's going to kind of be in my top five. Another guy I really don't know much about, but the one thing that I've come to say a good bit is that I love guys who have really dominated sites during the season to like have that follow through. We've seen it happen a good bit. Doesn't always happen, but you know, for baseball, that's why I like CSU Ram so much, was he kind of dominated DraftKings. And a couple of new guys, Hard Four and Live Straddle, are two guys I don't know much about, but I see them near the leaderboards every single weekend, it seems. Certainly over the last few weeks for Mr. Hard Four after he took down his $1 million prize. But those are my two picks to see if they can win $1 million. And again, they're not grinders, guys. At least I don't know who they are. But I call it the way I see it. And I know that many people saddened I didn't pick their name. But don't worry. You know, I'm just a loudmouth blowhard. I don't really wield any power or karma, I believe. But we'll see how it breaks down on Sunday. But should be a fun tournament. Great experience for these guys out there in Atlantis. And again, coverage coming this weekend. All right, let's get into the interview. We've got one of the best players on the planet named Corey Albertson. You'll learn all about him here in the next 30, 40 minutes. And want to thank him so much for the time. He's hanging down in Chile right now. So, you know, a lot of us, you know, might be in our parents' basement or, you know, in our man cave or whatever. But no, he's out in Chile dominating daily fantasy sports. So let's hear his story. It's Corey Albertson here on the Roto Grinders Daily Fantasy Fix. Okay, very pumped for our next guest here on the podcast, somebody I've been aiming to get on for quite some time. He has gained a good bit of notoriety and success playing daily fantasy sports, somewhat become the poster boy of the industry over the past year, and he's been spotlighted in the Wall Street Journal, on HBO Real Sports, and soon to be in a documentary, Living the Fantasy, about fantasy sports. So I'm talking about Corey Albertson, and we thank him for joining us on the Roto Grinders podcast today. Corey, thank you so much, sir. How are you doing, my man?
Good, Dan. Thanks for having me on the show. I would maybe dispute the poster boy designation. I think if I'm one at all, there's definitely a few other people that have gotten plenty of notoriety as Daily Fantasy's gotten bigger. But yeah, thanks for having me on, and I'm glad we finally were able to connect.
Absolutely, and we've got a lot of stuff to talk about because, you know, you're somebody who's, you know, obviously been, you know, in the public from, you know, those different avenues that we've talked about, but, you know, it's our first time really having a sit-down chat, so let's first delve into you as a daily fantasy player. How long have you been in the industry? How did you find out about the industry? Let's kind of start from the beginning there.
Yeah, sure. So in 2011, I was playing the World Series of Poker in Las Vegas. I had a pretty long poker career before I got into daily fantasy. And anyway, to make a long story short, Taylor Cabey, who was the founder of Draft Day, basically reached out to me when he kind of saw that I was having like a deep run in the main event, he like started following me on Twitter and asked me if I would be interested in meeting with him sometime to talk about this like daily fantasy project he's working on. And that was kind of the first introduction I had to daily fantasy was through Taylor. He's a great guy, you know, really smart guy. So I owe him a lot for kind of pulling me in and as one of like the early adopters of Draft Day. And I blogged for them for a little while. And that was kind of my introduction to daily fantasy.
Now, were you a fantasy player before then? Were you even a sports fan before then? Or was this simply a situation where Taylor saw and you basically realized that a lot of poker players might enjoy this sort of game and was trying to loop them in? I mean, what was your history with fantasy before the daily side of it?
Sure. I mean, with respect to Taylor pulling me in, that was probably just an intuition on his part that a poker player might enjoy Draft Day. But yeah, I played fantasy for a really long time. Like since like the late 90s, I was playing like season long leagues on Yahoo. I've been a sports fan since like some of my earliest memories as a kid were like watching football with my dad. And I think I was like 5 years old. My dad asked me if I wanted to go with him to buy like a pack of football cards. And I had no idea what that was, but I still remember like, you know, nodding along as a little kid would and buying like this 50-cent pack of 1989 pro set, trying to pull out like a Barry Sanders rookie card. And that was kind of my first introduction to like sports statistics, you know, on the back of the card. And, you know, I would say I've loved sports from a pretty early age.
Now you obviously have the statistics, you know, background a little bit, and we'll get more into that in just a moment. But, you know, monetarily speaking, did you ever play in high dollar season long leagues? Did you have any success in that front, or was this totally kind of, you know, just new for you in terms of playing fantasy sports for any kind of money?
Yes, yeah, so I never really played for much money. I've played in a league with like my high school and college buddies for like we do like $100 buy-in each year. I've probably done that since like 2004 or something. But other than that, never had really played fantasy for money until trying daily fantasy. And I think when I got into it, I saw the potential right away. Like at least theoretically, how you could potentially make money playing is if you can use your salary money to make a better lineup than the other people in your league. Like assuming that the rake is beatable, then you could make money at it. And so I was curious about it from the beginning and obviously thought it was a lot of fun. So that's how I got started.
Now, you're interesting in that, you know, you've got a partner in this, Ray Coburn, who I think you knew from your poker days. Did you guys jump into this as a team from the beginning? Was there a certain point in time where you felt like, hey, you know, he and I together can be better than individuals? How did that relationship kind of come together in terms of you being Sal Caps, him being Ray of Hope, and you guys kind of playing together?
Yeah, I've been really lucky to be friends with Ray for, I guess, like more than a decade now. When I first started playing online poker in like 2003, maybe 2004, Ray was one of like the more successful like micro stakes tournament players. He even won like the PokerStars like monthly leaderboard 1 month just from playing like $1 and $3 buy-in events. And I don't even remember like the exact story of how we became friends, but I think what happened is like I reached out to him through 2+2 or something and just kind of like picked his brain a little bit. And you know, Ray's like probably one of the nicest people you could ever hope to meet, so he was always willing to chat, and we kind of just struck up a friendship, mostly just talking about poker tournament strategy. And so, you know, we've been friends for a long time, and then as far as how we got involved, like, kind of playing daily fantasy together. So after that football season in 2011, when Taylor had introduced me to Draft Day, like, that next spring when baseball rolled around, I felt kind of clueless about how to, like, go about playing daily fantasy baseball. And I knew Ray was like a huge like baseball stats guy and had played in like a lot of different like auction leagues on 2+2 and stuff. So I was like, Ray would be perfect to kind of like partner with to help figure out how to win playing daily fantasy baseball. And I can be wrong, but I think that was his first introduction to daily fantasy was when I reached out to ask if he wanted to try to play these games, like fantasy baseball games together. And so that's kind of how we got started working together.
And I'd say it's worked out pretty well. I mean, is it, you know, it's one thing to be building your lineups yourself. And I know you guys, you know, have built a very successful model. And it's another thing I want to touch up on here in a minute. But how is it, you know, working with somebody in this field? I mean, I'm assuming you guys pretty much split everything, you know, 50-50. But, you know, on a weekend, you guys, you know, can sometimes build hundreds of lineups here. How does this go about being done? Is it, you know, one guy, you guys collaborate in your thought process, and then one person builds it? Do you build half? Does he build half? I think there's an interesting dynamic that not a lot of people, including myself, understand how you're able to kind of work alongside with somebody, you know, in this type of game, which can be very individualized.
Yeah, sure. So I think one of the things that makes like Ray and I's approach to daily fantasy kind of unique is that it's pretty labor intensive, since we are putting a lot of volume in play on a daily and weekly basis. It, especially with NFL season, it requires like several hours, like just to get all of the lineups made that we're putting into the contests. You know, so just registering for all the contests and then submitting all the lineups and that kind of like manual tedious process just takes a lot of time. And so it's been really advantageous for he and I to, like, you know, just double the people, double the manpower. We're able to just do more. But then also for me, it's what's been big is going through an MBA program. I don't know that I would be able to play fantasy as prolifically as I have if I didn't have Ray as a partner, basically able to take on a substantial amount of the workload on a typical day. Because there's a lot of days where I can't spend a whole lot of time on daily fantasy. And so I've, you know, been really lucky to be able to work with him while I pursue my MBA.
Now, let's just put it frankly. Who's the brains behind the model? Was this a situation where, you know, you guys collaborated on this and it was, you know, truly a team effort? You give him more credit than yourself? Because we've, you know, seen glimpses of it, I believe, on the HBO piece that they did on you guys. And it looks absolutely incredible in terms of all the different factors that you guys put into it. Where did this kind of model building come from? Is this something that you've done in the past? And one thing I'm curious is, like, for baseball, for example, how many different factors do you have in your model? Because I know a lot of people tried to build their own, and they're just kind of curious to know, you know, how many different things you guys use in yours.
Well, you asked a lot of questions there. First, let me say that the HBO little, like, screen grab of the football model was or maybe it was the baseball model, was not with my consent. In fact, I had even explicitly told them, like, you know, I don't mind that you guys are here filming, but, you know, if you're going to film my screen, like, I'd like to know about it because I want to be able to control what it is that you're recording and potentially airing. So when I saw, like, a little snippet of a certain part of the model, I was a little bit appalled that those guys did that. You know, no harm, no foul. I don't have any ill will against them for it, but it was a little bit slippery on their part to do that. Anyway, more to the point, to answer your questions, in terms of who's the brains behind the operation or you know, who's built the fantasy model, I guess I had a kind of a version 1.0, like, started of the NFL model that we use today before Ray and I started working together, just from that, like, first football season when Taylor got me into fantasy sports. Since then, like, I'd have to give Ray a lion's share of the credit in terms of a lot of the diligence required to, like, build out, you know, daily fantasy model, especially with baseball, where coming into it, I really didn't have any idea what we could do, you know, or how to go about building a baseball model. He's been awesome with that. And then basketball, you know, our basketball model has been applying some of the concepts from the other two sports and just duplicating the process into a new sport. But yeah, I mean, Ray's been excellent. So if you're asking where credit goes, I would give him a ton of it.
How many factors do you have in there, though? I mean, in my question is it an automated situation? Do you guys have programming that you know, actually updates it, you know, in real time, or is this another labor intensive side of your guys' business that, you know, each day you've got to go in there and manually add these things to your model? Because I know that's an aspect that you know, a lot of people don't like to deal with.
Yeah, I mean, I'm reluctant to talk too much about it because I'm a big sure. believer in not sharing information in daily fantasy. I think anyone who's actually profitable in playing this, like, it's kind of against their interest to tell people how they're winning, if we're being honest about it. But I guess in a roundabout way to answer your question, it is a lot of daily sort of maintenance to like update certain aspects of, you know, what it is that's leading you to build your fantasy lineup. So to say that it's automated would be really far from the truth. It's quite a bit of work and quite a bit of maintenance and updating and things like that.
All right, now let's talk a little bit about your success as a player. You know, you've been doing it for several years now. How would you rate in terms of the sports, which one is your most profitable?
Well, I don't think you could argue against, from a theoretical standpoint anyway, that NFL is the most profitable sport. You know, there's enough variance in daily fantasy that any given year you might do better in one sport versus another, but I think if you're like a good fantasy player with a good approach to playing the games, then the biggest opportunity for you know, return on investment is from playing fantasy football, just because there's so much money involved. And let's face it, a lot of the competition is pretty recreational focused, whereas with baseball and basketball, people who are playing that are kind of grinders, like playing every day. They're probably taking it pretty seriously instead of just trying to have fun and make a quick lineup.
And, yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely a fair assessment. Way more, I hate to use the term fish, but at least new people coming into NFL compared to those other two sports, especially as, you know, the summer drags on for MLB or the spring comes around for NBA. It dries up a good bit. What would you say your breakdown is percentage-wise from cash game plays, you know, 50-50s, head-to-heads, maybe 3 to 6 man games, compared to tournaments? Because, you know, you've been successful on both fronts, immensely successful on both fronts. So kind of curious what the breakdown is for you pretty much week to week or day to day.
Yeah, sure. First, let me make sure that there's a distinction between like expected return on investment and then actual expected profits on the season. It might be the case that you could profit more playing fantasy baseball or fantasy basketball just because you've got like 180 days a year that you can play each of those games versus just like 20 for fantasy football. So in the end, it might be kind of like all a pretty decent balance of like what you could expect to make from playing in each of the three sports, but that's just because NFL is handicapped in the sense that it has like 1/9 of the amount of days of daily games is the other two sports. But anyway, your question, remind me of your question. Sorry, Dan.
Oh, it's okay. It was, what is the breakdown, you know, cash game to tournaments?
Oh, yeah, sure.
From a week-to-week, day-to-day side of things.
Yeah, so Ray and I focused mostly on what you might call the tournament style, like top-heavy prize pool type of contests, or like leagues where, again, the prize pool tends to reward like the top of the entries. We haven't, like, historically we haven't done very well in double or nothing contests. Probably a couple reasons for that, but probably the biggest one is that they're just hard to beat in the long run, because when you're paying 10% or 12% or whatever the fees are, you know, the best you can really do is double your money. And so if you expect to be better than, like, way better than average, you should be playing contests where you're rewarded for like performing way better than average instead of just merely finishing in the top half. So, yeah, as a result of that, we mostly just focus on like the tournaments.
Well, you guys have been amazing so far. I think you've got, you know, the best, one of the best groups out there right now. You've already won $1 million on DraftKings, got another shot for it this weekend out there at the King of the Beach. Won the big FanDuel high roller event. They had another nice finish out there in their baseball championship. I mean, everything seems to be firing on all cylinders for you. But, you know, your life is a little bit different than I think most daily fantasy players, in that you mentioned you're a business school student, but in conjunction with that, you're also traveling a good bit. So take me through two things here. First off, why did you feel it's necessary or in your best interest to go to business school? I mean, you're having a ton of success as a daily fantasy player. You could have just wrote it out. And secondly, talk a little bit about, you know, your travels and what you've done personally through your opportunities at Notre Dame over the last, you know, 12 months or so.
Yeah, sure. Great question. First of all, I think when I was applying to go to business schools, it was before having gotten, you know, 99% of the success in daily fantasy. not to say that had I known that it was going to work out as well as it has, that I wouldn't have gone to business school, because I think I would. I think that being successful is probably even more reason to go to business school, just because of the opportunities that I think it opens up. And I can unpack that a little more, but to address your second point about, you know, why go to business school if you're successful at Daily Fantasy, I think for me, it's like, it's really important to bear in mind that, like, being able to make money playing Daily Fantasy is a very fleeting thing. And I can call upon just my experience in online poker to know that eventually, like, if you can make some money playing Daily Fantasy right now, it's probably not going to stay that way for very long. Just my opinion. But Ray and I, like, have a little bit of statistical evidence to back that up. It just shows that the games are getting tougher. You know, people are starting to make better lineups. They're tuning into Roto Grinders or, you know, whatever else to learn how to get better at Daily Fantasy. And so I think over time, the market's going to get tough enough to the point where you can't really expect to profit very much off of it if you're paying rake to the Daily Fantasy sites. And so for me, it's like, it's awesome right now. It's like, it's been pretty surreal. Like, I mean, it's been beyond surreal. Let's face it, to be, have any like type of pseudo level of fame for playing fantasy sports, let alone be making, like, you know, outrageous amounts of money. But, you know, thanks to that huge win on DraftKings that you referenced. But anyway, more to the point, I think, is that for me, it's important to realize that the world is a big place and that there's a lot out there that I don't know that I can stand to learn. And business school is a pretty good introduction to, you know, just learning more about how the world works and how things are intertwined and how economies work, and kind of like help you see how the world is a lot bigger than you might realize it is. So that, you know, if Daily Fantasy ever does dry out as an opportunity, there's something to fall back on, or, you know, other interests that I can pick up and move on with.
Now, you spent some time in Haiti. You're down in Chile right now as we're talking. How is it trying to follow American sports in those two places? And especially kind of take me through what it was like sweating a potential $1 million windfall in, I believe it was Chile, of all places. Like, talk me a little bit through these travels and you know, how you've been able to, and you know, basically what it's like to, you know, follow games from different countries and everything else.
Yeah, I'm probably the only person that's ever played Daily Fantasy from China or Chile, and I'd say I'm definitely the only person that's ever played it from Haiti. But yeah, I, to your point, I don't get to watch sports as much as I wish I did, just because I do stay pretty busy with school and other interests and commitments. And like you mentioned, I have a girlfriend that might not be around for very long if I was glued to the TV watching sports 8 hours a day. So, you know, it is a balance. But I'm okay with that. I think it's, in a way, it can be a little bit distracting to watch sports too much, just because watching sports and being good at playing Daily Fantasy really don't have anything to do with each other. And so I don't want to get too clouded or distracted by, you know, spending too much time watching sports, even though I do really enjoy it from just a sheer perspective of a fan. But yeah, like sweating Monday Night Football when you could win $1 million on DraftKings from Chile was pretty fun. You mentioned a little earlier that Living the Fantasy, the documentary film that's being made, is they're following, I think, 7 or 8 fantasy football players, one of which is me. And so when they found out, basically I was messaging the producer that day saying, like, you know, maybe they had already figured it out that Ray and I had a chance to win $1 million on DraftKings, and they were like, what can we do to, like, film this? And I was like, well, you know, we worked it out to where they sent out a cameraman in Santiago to, like, a bar. We were able to find, like, a pretty good sports bar that airs Monday Night Football here in Santiago. And so myself and all of my classmates who were from Notre Dame who are here with me went out and, you know, just watched the game. And it ended up being, like, pretty much perfect for their film, I guess, in the sense that, you know, everything went well. Le'Veon Bell scored, like, 1 million fantasy points in the first half to seal the win, and the champagne started flowing shortly after that. It was pretty cool.
Have any of your business school, you know, students or fellow students, you know, obviously they know about this. Have they given it a try? Have they like, have they looked at it and been like, you know, Corey's a smart guy, but you know, I go to Notre Dame Business School too. Like, why can't I do this? Have you found any of those other people jump in and give it a try themselves?
You know, you might think that would happen, but honestly, I haven't. I don't think any of my classmates have like given Daily Fantasy a try. Just knowing that I play it, I would say for the most part, they're all pretty busy people with their own interests in their own lives, and I think many of them find it really cool what I do. But I don't think any of them, to the best of my knowledge, have like a deep personal interest in trying to duplicate the success that I've had or anything like that. So, yeah.
We're joined by Corey Albertson. You'll probably see the name Salcaps or Ray of Hope. That is pretty much the screen names for him and his partner, Ray Coburn. Again, they're going to be at DraftKings and the Bahamas. I'm assuming Ray is going to make the road trip for that one?
Yeah, Ray is going to be in the Bahamas this weekend. I'm unfortunately not able to make it just because of commitments down here for school. So
he was pretty close in the last one. You guys made a real good run in the baseball championship down there, and just a few things didn't break your way late, so it'll be interesting to see if you can do it this time around. Let's kind of talk about, you know, we mentioned the future a little bit, and, you know, if you can build, you know, successful model projecting athletes' performances, is there an opportunity for you to build a similar model in different aspects of the world and life and business that could be lucrative for you guys? That's something that might be down the pipe for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a great question too, Dan. One thing like that I think a lot about is how the approach that Ray and I have taken to Daily Fantasy might be able to be applied to other markets. And I think there's kind of a eerie amount of like parallels between playing like poker and Daily Fantasy. I think there's also quite a lot of parallels between playing Daily Fantasy and investing. The tricky part about investing is like global financial markets are really efficient. So I think what's made Daily Fantasy so special, at least for me, is that you kind of came into a market like as it was first developing. So you're starting from a point where like no one really knows anything. And so you're able to like it's possible basically to like be the guy that figures it out or whatever, that, you know, quote unquote solves the market. Not to say that that's what we've done, but it's easier to do that with Daily Fantasy, whereas with, you know, stock trading or investing, it's actually extremely difficult to do that just because there is so much information already priced into the market, you know, trillions of dollars of global invested assets that, you know, obviously people are taking pretty smart approaches to managing that money. So the opportunities are a lot like harder to find, and, you know, to try to figure out how you can add value in that market, I think, is extremely difficult. But I am curious about investing and, you know, investment management and how some of the approaches that like Ray and I have taken to doing well in Daily Fantasy might have a chance to add value to creating more efficient financial markets.
Has anybody ever approached you about kind of, I guess, investing in you guys, you know, and trying to become a partner? I mean, you have had a lot of notoriety here on some national fronts, so I'm sure that, you know, people know you're good at doing this. Have people made offers, not that you need backing, but, you know, I've already read something just about a week ago theorizing that we're going to see Daily Fantasy hedge funds. Has that happened with you? And I mean, obviously you don't need to do it because you're having success in your own right, but do you think that's something we could see in the future?
Yeah, I saw that article too and kind of laughed at it because I was thinking, like, this is pretty much what Ray and I have already been doing. Like, and like you said, there's not a great need for, like, capital investment in what we're doing just because we're pretty much getting – more or less, however much money we think it's profitable to put in play, we're able to do that. And so I don't know if you're ever going to see a Daily Fantasy hedge fund in the sense that someone goes out and raises, you know, millions of dollars in assets to invest in Daily Fantasy, just because I don't see the markets ever being that big that you would need someone to go out and do that. But, yeah, in terms of people approaching, asking if we're interested in investment, we've gotten a lot of that. You mentioned the Wall Street Journal article that that I was featured in this summer. I got so many responses to that, like probably over 1,000 responses, I would say, and they can pretty much be bucketed into like three different categories. The first was like people who were looking for, you know, thought it was really cool and kind of wanted some kind of like a job or an opportunity, basically just to reach out and say like, hey, if you ever need any help, I'm here for you, which was, I thought was pretty cool. And then the second type was people like wanting to invest. Like a lot of people were like, you know, hey, I talked to my wife or I talked to my golf buddies or something. We can put together $5,000 and like, you know, pretty much just like pleading with you to accept their check and like, you know, double their money. Like, and, you know, I had to tell them thanks, but no thanks. Then the third type of people, the ones that I think were like kind of the most like amusing, were like basically like, hey, like I read the Wall Street Journal article. I really love fantasy sports too, and I'm really good at fantasy sports too, and I think I can do what you're doing. I just need a little bit of your help. Like, would you mind answering these like 13 questions about how I can like beat fantasy sports? And like, I kind of like always had to chuckle when I got those emails because it's like, you know, not to sound mean, but why would I like take my time helping you figure out how to beat me, basically? So, you know, that was kind of like the typical range of responses after that Wall Street Journal article.
Wow, very interesting. Now, one thing that I want to kind of move to here is, you know, again, you say you're not the poster boy, but in theory, you know, at least on a national level, I think you are a good bit. Now, what was your feeling about the portrayal of the industry in the HBO Real Sports piece that they did? Because there was mixed emotions from a lot of people who play the games. Some thought it was unfair, others thought it was fair. I'm curious to know your thoughts on the job that they did portraying the industry.
Yeah, sure. I mean, first of all, I think there's definitely a lot of people who are great ambassadors and poster boys, so to speak, of daily fantasy, you know, not the least of which are guys like Peter Jennings and Drew Dinkmeyer and stuff, and Al Smizzle, who've, you know, gotten on as DraftKings pros and engage a lot with daily fantasy players and stuff, do some other things that I'm kind of jealous that they have the time for, that I wish I had a little more time for. But yeah, to speak to your question about the HBO piece, I pretty much totally agreed. Like, anyone who listened to your podcast after that aired, you pretty much summed up exactly how I felt about it, which was that more or less I thought it was a pretty fair piece. You know, they're journalists, so they're going to ask, like, it's not a fluff piece. They're not just going to create, like, a 12-minute advertisement for Daily Fantasy. They're going to ask tough questions and, you know, point to things that challenge the industry, so to speak. So for the most part, I thought they did an absolutely fantastic job of capturing Daily Fantasy as it stands today in a 13-minute segment.
Do you have any fears for the industry or anything that you think the industry needs to be careful of, be wary of, or handle things a certain way to avoid any, you know, pitfalls down the road? I mean, you're really plugged in. You know, you're making a lot of money playing this game, and you've recognized things can kind of change, you know, pretty quickly. So kind of curious about your thoughts on the business side of the industry and things that you think that we need to be careful of.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'd be curious to hear your answer to this question as well, because, you know, your guess is as good as mine with a lot of this stuff. But in terms of, like, do I have any fears? I think the biggest thing that you could worry about right now with Daily Fantasy would be regulation, and that for some reason you would attract some kind of, like, federal regulator who sees a chance to, like, make a career off of cracking down on these, Daily Fantasy sites. So something I've talked to DraftKings and FanDuel about is, like, being more proactive about things that might attract the attention of regulators. So I think a lot of one of the things I kind of have a distaste for is a lot of, like, the back and forth, like, bickering and competition between the two sites. I think if what they say is true, that Daily Fantasy can grow so much more from where it is today, then they should kind of just shut up and run their businesses, honestly, is my opinion, and not spend so much time worrying about what they can do to, like, put each other down by filing petty lawsuits against each other or, you know, whatever else, like trying to pillage each other's player base if one of their sites goes down. I think stuff like that is pretty bad for the industry and just brings it down as a whole. And then the other fear would be just be something that like some really like bad piece of negative press comes out that could have been avoided. Like some teenager gets his dad's credit card and punts $5,000 online, and you know some journalist picks up that story and runs with it. You want to try to avoid those things where possible, and so there could maybe be a little bit more proactive work on the part of making sure that age identification and stuff is taking place on the sites, and you know things like that. That like if you're running a business that you really think is worth $1 billion, you should have a pretty long-term view for what you can do to cultivate and sustain a sustainable business.
Yeah, I think you bring up some very good points. I went on a podcast rant about exactly what you were talking about there in the beginning of that. I think this industry, you know, let's play nice. You know, lots of money to be made for everybody here. And I think the competition got a little fierce there for a while. Just even in the last 3 to 6 months, I think we've seen a little bit less of that, which is good to see. But we're talking with...
If you don't mind, you talk about the fierce competition. Like, do you think that... What's your opinion on is there room for two big sites in a fully developed, mature daily fantasy market?
I think there has to be, because I think daily fantasy is so unique in the sense that, you know, the games themselves don't have to be identical. And as long as there's something that differentiates the two, whether it's late swap, whether it's the roster makeups, obviously the salaries each and every day are different. Is it a big enough market to have 20 players? Absolutely not. But, you know, I think we're crazy to think that, you know, you can't have more than one daily fantasy site. It's like saying, you know, there's only, you know, McDonald's for your fast food burger joints that you want. No, you know, you can go to Burger King. You can go to Wendy's. There's other options out there. And I think having those options is going to really strengthen the industry more than anything. Because let's face it, you consolidate it down to one site. What do we think, you know, is going to happen to the industry? One, you know, the term you brought up about three times or four times in this interview already is rake. And, I mean, who's to say that they basically look at it, we're the only game in town, people are going to come here, and we're already seeing the rake start to rise a good bit. I mean, how rake conscious of a player are you, Corey? I mean, you play as much volume as probably most people out there, and I know you've probably calculated the rake on some of these tournaments, and I've seen it upwards of 20% sometimes. It's kind of ludicrous.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you that Ray and I are extremely rake conscious, and it's kind of unfortunate because I agree with you. Like, if there ever is a consolidation of the industry or something into one big player, I think you're seeing this right now with PokerStars, where they more or less have a monopoly on the online poker market. And what did they just recently do? I don't really know a lot of the details of it, but the little bit that I read about it is basically that they increased rake by cutting back on their, you know, VIP player bonuses and stuff like that. And so a lot of people are griping about that and complaining about that, but I think it was a smart move by PokerStars, and the reason is because they know they can get away with it. And so it's good if there's more competition. You know, you don't want to see the industry become just like one like giant player that can get away with charging a bunch of rake. So I think that'll really ruin daily fantasy sports. So, and another thing in terms of like rake consciousness, I think the average player is just clueless. They probably pay almost no attention to rake. But what's important is how much rake consciousness there is by volume of play. And I think that if you look at, like, the Roto Grinders community, you know, players like Ray and I, people like Condia, et cetera, they're probably, I don't know the exact percentages, but those players are accounting for, like, a huge percentage of the overall buy-ins in daily fantasy. And, you know, those are the people who are most rate conscious as well. So in terms of, like, how much is the overall money going into daily fantasy paying attention to the rake, I would say that they're paying attention to it. You know, maybe not as closely as they could, but you're going to have to be careful about what you can get away with as a daily fantasy operator. And you're right, some of these contests have gotten a little bit insane where the rake creeps up to like 20%, and you're just like, wow, why would I play this?
Yeah, but the problem is, you know, if you want to win $1 million, and not pointing a finger at DraftKings in particular, because they've overlaid that tournament a good bit throughout the year, but if you want to play for, like you say, this incredible amount of money, you don't really have a choice. You know, where else are you going to go to do that? And it's just a matter of whether or not it gets to the point where people throw their hands up all together and say, it's not a profitable endeavor, I'm done. I don't think we're there. I don't think we're kind of close to that yet. But it could happen at some point in time if sites don't look at that. Last thing, you know, for you, and I appreciate you giving us some time here, Corey. I know you're a busy man. You know, what do you think, you know, I guess we just kind of like talked a little bit about the future of the industry, but let's look at yourself 5 years from now, okay? Let's kind of project. 5 years from now, do you still suspect you're a daily fantasy player?
Wow, good question. I think 5 years. I could see 5 years from now that it's not as much a part of my life as it is today. That's if my hypothesis that the games are going to get a lot tougher and that you're going to have a lot of, you know, more or less copycats kind of coming in and figuring out how to, like, make good lineups. I could see the opportunity to make money playing fantasy drying up pretty quickly, such that 5 years from now, it wouldn't be as important part of my life as it is today.
Do you think, though, it is...
Today? If for some reason I'm wrong about that?
I think we had a little connection problem, but do you think that this game ultimately becomes just a game to play as a hobby than it is to one to become ridiculously profitable? And let's face it, there's nothing wrong with that. I think that is a fine place for this game.
So to that point, I'll definitely be playing to some extent in 5 years, just because I think it's extremely fun, and you know, just having like a sweat at like winning a bunch of money on going into like Monday Night Football is like, it's fun. Like, let's face it, it's extremely fun. That's why I love what I do right now with Daily Fantasy. So I'll always play for that reason, but it's just kind of a question of like, how seriously will I take it, or like how long will it be viewed as something that you can like, I don't want to say make a career out of, but you know, let's face it, the secret's out of the bag. Like, if you're good at Daily Fantasy, there's a chance to make a living wage playing it today. And I don't think that'll be the case for more than just a couple more years, but for however long it is the case, it's hard not to take it pretty seriously and spend a lot of time on it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the enjoyment that people get out of playing it is why the game itself is not going anywhere. Last thing you play, let's just talk FanDuel, DraftKings. If you could make one change on each of those two sites, what would it be?
Oh, man. Wow. Good question. I'll probably think of something after this call, but I mean, there's like screams at me right now, like, you know.
Are you a late swap guy? Are you not a late swap guy? Are you?
What's that?
Are you? Do you like the late swap?
Yeah, I was kind of kidding saying what's that. I think I like the late swap a lot because I think it adds another layer of decision making to playing Daily Fantasy. And so, if you believe you have an edge, then you want to make as many decisions as you can. So yeah, I think it's great. And I think that, I don't know, you could talk about this better than I could, but I'd imagine that players probably tend to like it as well, because there's nothing more frustrating than finding out that your guy's not playing after the lineup's already locked. So
it's a double-edged sword, Corey. There's two sides to that thing, because I agree with you when I'm single, 25, but when I'm married, two kids, and I've got kids' baths that I got to take care of, there is something that I'm not going to lie, that when 7 o'clock rolls around, I can just say, okay. Yeah. So there's two sides to that argument for sure, but you know,
that makes total sense, and believe me, you don't have to have kids to feel that way too, because Ray and I feel that way all the time. So, you know, we're trying to do everything we can to make monitoring lineups after contests have begun as like efficient as possible, so we don't have to stare at our screen like, or be glued to Twitter all night or whatever. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I think it goes back to, again, like having two players in this space is really nice. It even from that side of things, you know. If that's not something you want to deal with, you've got a place you can play. If you want that extra little bit of edge, then you've got another place you can play. So it'll be interesting to see exactly how it ends up here down the road. But, Corey, best of luck to you this weekend. Thanks again for giving me the time here today to talk to you. I know the community here at RotoGrinder certainly appreciates it, and hearing from you know, one of the very best players in the entire industry. So thanks again, and I'll say hi to Ray this weekend out in the Bahamas. So thanks again.
Yeah, we'll have fun down there, and thanks for having me on, Dan. Hopefully we can do it again sometime.
Okay, you want some NBA talk? We will do it. And, you know, it's a big 13-game schedule here, so we'll try and zip through this as long as we possibly can since this podcast is going to be pretty long today. We'll start with OKC in Philadelphia. And Kevin Durant, only 28 fantasy points, played 30 minutes in that first game at 10K today. I actually really like him against Philadelphia. Last year, he put up some mega numbers against his team. I think he went for 47 points one game against them last year, and then also I think had a triple-double in another game. Philadelphia cannot handle Durant. There is a chance it's a blowout, and he doesn't play much in the fourth quarter, but I think I certainly want some exposure to him. You know, that was not the easiest matchup for him in his first game back. Philadelphia pretty much is. So at 10K, I prefer him over Russell Westbrook. Michael Carter-Williams' usage has been up a good bit with Tony Roten on the shelf. I warn you a little bit, though. His numbers last year against this OKC team were absolutely horrendous. So I'm probably going to be off on him on a 13 game here today. Also, I saw that Tony Roten might be coming back soon. I know that he was shooting for the fifth. I don't know if it's going to happen. Obviously, if he would come back, that's a big reason to avoid Michael Carter-Williams as well. Besides that, there's not a whole lot that stands out to me that I want to play. Maybe KJ McDaniels, just because the minutes are really high and production has been there as well. 32, 31, 39, only 4,900. And, you know, he's going to get a matchup with Kevin Durant, which probably is not going to work out all that well. But he's somebody at a cheaper price point who I think I potentially will be rostering today. Denver and Washington. This should be a higher scoring game, I believe. I mean, Denver pretty much goes over 100 every single matchup, and I think there's obviously a handful of guys we got to look at here. First off, John Wall, always a good play, I think. You know, he's pretty much 40 fantasy points most nights. Had a couple of hiccups against New Orleans and Cleveland, but bounced back nice against LA and Miami. That's a nice price tag for a guy who you can get 40 fantasy points from. So I like him at home against Denver. Ty Lawson, same with him. He is basically the engine that makes that Dallas team go, and he's been hovering pretty much near 40 nightly, 8,900. I probably would prefer Wall at 400 more than Lawson, but I'm not hating on Lawson in a game I expect to be pretty high scoring. Gortat has picked it up lately. You know, with Nene out, he's definitely hit the glass a little bit more. 39, 31, 53. Historically, Denver, not particularly great against bigs. So, Gortat, the price is starting to creep up a little bit at 7,300, but he's somebody at least to consider. And then I think the only other guy in this matchup that I'm looking at is Bradley Beal, only because he's coming off a really good game, his best game of the year against the Lakers, scored 40 fantasy points. We should have seen that coming, to be honest with you, and that's probably on me a little bit. Beal is way better than this 25 fantasy points output he's been giving, and it was just a matter of time before he exploded, and it made sense for it to happen against the Lakers, who just aren't a very good team defensively. So I was on him on DraftKings, probably should have been more in on him on FanDuel. The price, though, is not a gimme at 6,800, but it's not a killer either. So I think another high-paced game, and the fact that he played so well that matchup, I think, you know, they had a lot of success. And you listen to the coach's words afterwards. He's like, we need Beal to be more aggressive. That's a nice way of saying, shoot the frickin' basketball, Bradley Beal. So I don't mind him again this week. Probably off of Flalo. Probably off Timofey Mozgov. I'm not a big fan of his. Just, you know, he's got that occasional 30, 40 fantasy point game, but for the most part, not overly interested. Chris Humphries had 20 rebounds against the Lakers last game. 20. But he doesn't do that all that often, so I don't think he repeats that, so I'm not going to buy in on that $4,400 price point. New York and Charlotte, I'm pretty much all out on this game entirely. Low total, just not a whole lot going for either of these two teams. Charlotte really struggles against point guards, but, you know, Jose Calderon at 5,800, I don't think I want to spend on that. Carmelo looks hurt, so for me, let's just move on. New York and Charlotte is a no-go. Lakers in Boston, this is a go on a lot of different levels. First, we get Rondo. You know, he's been really up and down. great against Atlanta, sucked against Detroit, but he gets Jeremy Lin today. And obviously this is, I don't know if it's a rivalry game anymore. It was, you know, maybe back in 1987. But still two pretty high-profile teams. I can see Rondo wanting to play well in this matchup here, and I could see him dominating Jeremy Lin. $8,200 on FanDuel, little expensive, but not killer. So I think that he presents big upside, especially in tournaments here today. The power forward position has been really dominated by opponents against Boston, and I don't like Carlos Boozer at all because he doesn't really play 30 minutes a game. If there's a super sneaky guy who's going to be like under 2% owned or maybe even under 1% owned, it's probably him. $6,200 is not cheap enough for me probably to bite, but I'm going to throw it out there as that trend has definitely yielded some results. We also talked about 20 rebounds for Chris Humphries against the Lakers last game. Well, Jared Sullinger plays power forward for the Celtics. And again, 7K, it's not a bad cash game play. I still don't love him in tournaments because I don't think he's a 50 fantasy point upside play, but definitely keep your eye on it in this matchup. Jeff Green, you know, back-to-back solid games, 32 fantasy points last game, but only 39 total. Doesn't do a whole lot in rebounding, assists, blocks, steals, so that's the drawback with him, but a safe enough price tag and a pretty good matchup here against the Lakers. Kobe Bryant at 9K. I think he's fine in this really high total game. Had a couple of days off to rest as well. I mean, he had been in a situation where it was third game in four nights, still scored 29 against Washington, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him go back over 35 minutes, have a big fantasy day today. Really like him a good bit at shooting guard. Center position, Olynyk is the best player they have at center. I mean, 20-7 in 27 minutes, but you can't really pay that number at $5,500. Tyler Zeller, no thank you. Jordan Hill, really inconsistent, and DVP rankings, not particularly in the favor of the center position against Boston, but I don't put, you know, all, I put credence in it, but it's not the one thing that I look at. I mean, Andre Drummond lit that Boston team up at the center position as well. So, again, he's kind of minutes dependent, got a couple of games to rest. I think he can bounce back in this one, so I don't think he's a terrible play at $6,600. Atlanta and Brooklyn, again, not a sexy game at all from a fantasy perspective. Obviously, Kevin Garnett, if he sits, Teletovic went absolutely nuts last game, 26-15. I obviously only like him as a starter. I think that more people are going to chase this than probably should. He gets matched up with Paul Millsap here. I don't see him putting that kind of performance together here in this game. Honestly, not a whole lot really interests me. Jeff Teague is still priced down a little bit. You know, he had those two, you know, rough games against Boston and Charlotte, but they had 46 fantasy points against Miami last time out. And Brooklyn, one position they don't guard particularly well is point guard. So at $7,200, you've got a pretty nice price tag on him. But besides those guys, nobody else that I really want to roster here. I guess Brooke Lopez is a guy who's had back-to-back 40 fantasy point games, and maybe he's starting to get in the swing of it a little bit. But again, you're looking at a situation, third game in four nights for Brooklyn. That doesn't bode well for me. Played the second, the third, now the fifth. So think that makes Brooke Lopez a bit of a risk, but under 7K with 40 fantasy point upside, maybe not the worst play on the board. Cleveland and Toronto, and obviously Kyle Lowry is a tremendous play. He's been over 50, three straight games, $9,100 is a fair price tag, and he gets Kyrie Irving, who we've seen point guards have pretty good success against. So chalk him up as a good play today. Same in this game as Kyrie Irving himself, 37-28-24. That's his scoring output the last three. So three straight over 40. I think he's trying to take some of the aggression offensively, and it's really working out for him. So at $8,300, that's a solid price tag on FanDuel. Grievous Vasquez finally jumped about $900, so he's at about $4,800, but he's still a good fantasy play. You know, he can still get you a good 6X potentially on that salary. Been 30 fantasy points or right near that pretty much his last three games, and I don't hate on him at all today. I mean, if you look at shooting guard position, that's really been a struggle for Cleveland this season to defend. So it might be Lowry playing that two a little bit more, but either way, I think both the guards in Toronto continue to be in play with DeMar DeRozan out. I'm not going to look to Lou Williams again, just not doesn't do enough for me besides score, so no thank you there. Terrence Ross, again, playing big minutes, 30 minutes over his last three, but another guy just doesn't fill up enough categories for my liking. Let's see. Valanciunas, I think, could be kind of sneaky in this matchup, 5,900. He's been known to get in the mid-30s from time to time. So, I mean, even in the game log, he's last 10, he's at least had 1, 2, 3, 4 out of the last 10 at 30 or more. Add two more to that at 25 or more, and at under 6K, I think gives you a little bit of upside in that front court that doesn't have a whole lot of rebounding ability. Okay, Houston and Miami. A little surprise. Houston was only 6-point dogs to Minnesota. Really? Like, they should blow this team out. Now, I know there's injuries galore here for Houston, and we got to look to a couple guys here. First off, James Harden at 10-4. I'm not really worried about what happened last game against Memphis. You know, he wasn't great, but it was only a product of minutes. I mean, he only played 28 minutes, scored 36 fantasy points. If he plays 38 minutes, he probably gives you 50 fantasy points, which you're looking for. So, again, blowout potential is going to be there, but with all the injuries, he's going to have his hands on the ball an absolute ton. And you know who is, I believe, dead last against the shooting guard defensively? I believe it is Minnesota. So look to James Harden to be an absolute top play today. Jason Terry as well, shooting guard eligible on FanDuel, 33 and 32 in the last two games. I'm going to call it now. Jason Terry does not go for 33 or 32 fantasy points today. In fact, I will take the under 30 fantasy points, but that doesn't make him somebody we don't consider at that price point. If you want to get some studs, you know, he's going to start. He's been playing big minutes, and he's been producing. I just think today we get him kind of regressed a little bit further back. Because again, he's, you know, you can kind of expect those 16, 18 points. The 6 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 steals, that's kind of outlier performances the last two games. So I think that a lot of people will be on Jason Terry. I don't think he's a terrible fade in tournaments for me today. The bigs had nice games. Tariq Black, you know, the thing about him though is he's foul trouble waiting to happen. He had 10 and 11 last game. Still only managed 23 fantasy points, so I'm not going to really look there. The guy you want at power forward is Monty Yunus. He's underpriced at 56. Guys plays heavy minutes. Even last game against Memphis, he was a fantasy point a minute. You know, 25 minutes, about 24.5 fantasy points. So again, assuming this game is somewhat into the fourth quarter, which Vegas sure thinks that it potentially will be, I think Monty Yunus can get you another mid-30s performance. So I like him a good bit today. None of the Minnesota guys stand out for me. Maybe Mo Williams, but he had a little back injury. He's kind of questionable. If he would be out, then I guess Zach LaVine at 3,600 would get the most run at point guard once again. But his upside is pretty limited. But in those games where they've had nobody else, he's done okay. But honestly, I think a guy like Corey Brewer at 4,900 would get a bigger bump there. But injuries all over on Minnesota. Definitely take note of that. Gorgie Jang had a nice game the other day, 15 and 16. And it was nice. You know, he was definitely listening to the podcast the other day because I absolutely panned the hell out of him. I was like, what happened to the Gorgie Jang we expected to score 30 fantasy points a night when he got, you know, 35 minutes? And, well, he did it against Philadelphia. I don't think he's a terrible play here today at home against Houston either. Okay, San Antonio in Memphis. Got to definitely keep our eye on some injury situations here. Marc Gasol is questionable. I think he's probably not going to play. But there's not somebody that stands out as like, oh, plug him in. You know, he's out. This guy's underpriced. I mean, nobody's going to feel good about Kosta Koufos. Okay, and if you do, then you must be Greek, because there's no other reason to be excited to roster Kosta Koufos. And Zach Randolph, meh. You know, again, he's somebody who really let me down last game. I guess maybe he's got to hit the boards a little bit more. Price isn't bad at 7,400, just not overly excited about that. John Lawyer played pretty well the other night in his limited minutes, but again, he's a limited player, so no thank you there. Actually, the one guy, two guys in this game I'm looking at, Mike Conley against Tony Parker and his I guess you could call it defense. And I don't think a lot of people like taking Conley. And if you look at his history, last three home games against San Antonio, he's absolutely dominated Tony Parker. So that could happen again here today. I like him at that price point and low ownership levels. And obviously Kawhi Leonard at 7,300 is a monster. But this could be a blowout here. Potentially, but in fact, this game is in Memphis. I think should keep it somewhat close, but don't mind Kawhi Leonard at 7,300 at small forward here today. Phoenix-Dallas should be a high-scoring game. As long as Isaiah Thomas is out, give me some Eric Bledsoe and give me some Goran Dragic, 7,300 for Dragic, Bledsoe at 7,300 as well. Monte, again, he's going to score a ton of points. As he normally does in a high-scoring, high-paced game. Look to him to be a solid play. By the way, I really like Bledsoe. I just don't see there's any chance Monte Ellis can guard him. So he might be one of my top shooting guard plays of the day, assuming Isaiah Thomas is out. Chandler Parsons, you know, he played well, I guess, that game against Chicago. Looked okay against Milwaukee, but still finished under 30 fantasy points. And again, not a bad price point, but probably not too much exposure for me. Dirk should be fine in this game as well if it's close and he gets his full allotment of, you know, 30 minutes, 30 plus minutes. He's been good. 31 minutes, 26, 33, 37, 39, 46, 32, 28, 42, 44. So it's just all about game flow with him. And this should be, I think, a pretty closely contested game. Could look to Markieff Morris. He definitely has a little bit of upside. He's the one big I kind of like, but at 7,200, I'd probably prefer, you know, somebody like Sullinger at 200 less. So that's kind of my feeling on that game. But Miami, Milwaukee, next one for us here. And Brandon Knight, I think he could have a good game here. You know, he's been hot the last two. Miami not great against defending the point guard position. And I think Brandon Knight at home against the Heat looks like a pretty good spot for him. Dwayne Wade, 8,100. Again, 44 fantasy points last game against Atlanta. Don't mind him, but don't love him here. Probably not going to pay up that number for him. I think I'd rather go up 900 and just get Kobe, to be honest with you. Jabari Parker, big letdown the other night. Boy, did he just absolutely destroy some solid teams for me. But he could bounce back in this game. That was kind of an aberration. I mean, I don't know what happened there with the rotation. He just didn't play at all, 22 minutes. So Jabari Parker should get back, I think, in his good graces in this matchup. The one guy to look at, I guess, is Chris Bosh. I mean, centers usually do well against Miami, or excuse me, against Milwaukee. But he's not like your true center. I mean, yeah, he plays the position, but he's a perimeter player more than anything. Was not great against them earlier. 39 minutes, 10 points, 5 boards, 5 assists. So I question whether or not he kind of fits this trend of bigs doing well against Milwaukee, because he just really doesn't qualify as a true, quote-unquote, big in my book. But 8,700, too much for me. I'll probably pass on him there. Orlando, Utah, another game, not a whole lot of excitement in terms of rostering guys in this game. I think Gordon Hayward will be fine in this matchup. You know, struggled against Toronto, but for his career, he never really was great against that team. He should be good here. I actually like Tobias Harris a good bit. I think he gets back over 30 fantasy points. Utah, not a great team defensively, but at home they should do well. And his Kanter, you know, he played pretty freaking well the last two games. 34, 31 minutes, went 19-9, 17-5. So I don't see him not succeeding against Orlando's bigs. They have not been particularly great defensively. Whether it's Vooch or Kyle O'Quinn, I like Enes Kanter as your kind of punt play at center position here. Derek Favors, 7,300. You know, upside in tournaments, but not anybody I'm looking to really roster at that number. Besides that, man, Oladipo at 65, maybe. But boy, he's just no inconsistency there. Tournament play only. But honestly, Orlando, Utah, let's move on. Not exciting. Indiana and Sacramento. Okay, here we go. There are some plays here. Looks like DeMarcus Cousins is going to be out. So we got to look at a few things here. First off, Rodney Stuckey moved into the starting lineup last game. Took 15 shots. Donald Sloan played 0 minutes. Didn't do a ton with it, only 26 fantasy points, but I'm going to make a call. I say over 30 fantasy points for Rodney Stuckey here in this matchup against Sacramento. He's going to start again, I'm sure, and he's the best shooter they have. So give me Stuckey today at 4,800 as a nice shooting guard play. I also don't mind Darren Collison. Wish his salary was cheaper at 7,400, but Indiana has struggled against point guards this year. I think they're like the fifth worst on the season, so this might be a spot for Collison to get going again. I mean, the shot was just not falling against Toronto, but I see him bouncing back here at home against Indiana, but 7,400, going to be tough to pay that number. I think I probably like Conley a little bit better, so you want to go contrarian in a tournament, Darren Collison, not a bad way to go. Rudy Gay, here's the problem I got with Rudy Gay, is, yeah, usage is through the roof. You know, 40 fantasy points again last game, been at that number two of the last three, no DeMarcus Cousins, nice price tag at 8,100, but man, you know who's the best against small forwards on the season? It is Indiana. So that scares me a little bit. I think that's a reason why I like Darren Collison a bit more, because I think that Rudy is going to have his hands full in this matchup. I think you definitely need some exposure to him if you're running multiple lineups out. And I think he's going to be really, really popular today. But I'm holding my breath a little bit on him just because that DVP, it's not good. It's not in his favor. So that worries me a little bit with Rudy Gay tonight. Reggie Evans has stepped in okay, to say the very least. He had that 44 fantasy point game against Memphis. And then Toronto played big minutes, only 32, but got you 10.7 boards. I mean, let's be honest. That's what you're going to get out of Reggie Evans. 17 and 20, not at all. That was just fluke. So 4,300 gives you an upside punt play. What I want to see, though, is I want to see Derek Williams start, please. 14 minutes last game. Scored 18 points, 4 rebounds. Give me a tweet out here, Sacramento Kings, that says Derek Williams is starting today at 3,600. I would love to put him in my lineup. Now, Indiana's usually tough against power forward David West back, but he's a guy who likes to shoot and likes to score and is pretty good at it. I mean, at center, you got Ryan Holland starting. He stinks. He is awful. I mean, they have no bigs going for them whatsoever. I mean, maybe Roy Hibbert has a big game here because of that, because I don't know who can guard him. I have no idea who's going to guard him, but I think his upside's a little bit limited with David West back, but the price tag, not bad, 6,700. Okay, that's the look at NBA for today. Good luck in all your matchups. All right, folks, that's going to do it for us today. I know it's been a long podcast. We thank you for hanging in there. Hopefully you enjoyed that interview. Thanks to Corey Albertson for talking with us here today. Thank you for listening and downloading each and every day. I'm telling you, all those kind words people give me on Twitter, private messages, emails, it means the world to me. Thank you so much for listening and downloading. It's a true passion to do this show for you, between myself and Crazy Gaby each and every day. So thank you so much for listening. Do join us for our coverage both on Saturday night, SiriusXM Fantasy Sports Radio, 2 hours with me and Chris Beer Makers fan Prince, and I'll be live from the Atlantis Resort in the Bahamas. And then, of course, on Sunday, we'll have, obviously, our Grinders live shows, and we'll be doing live coverage as well from the King of the Beach in Atlantis. So tune into that on the Grinders. You'll see everything right there on the front page, so definitely check that out. Any other issues that you want to discuss, find me on Twitter at Dan_Bach, on email at Dan@RotoGrinders.com. But till Monday, everybody, have yourself a tremendous Friday and weekend, and we will see you.